You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
So recently, Russian military forces have started to place themselves around the border with Ukraine and have brought up 190,000 troops to the border. Historically, Russia has had a high level of influence in Eastern Europe. However, this is the most military force that has been seen in the area since 2014. Currently, Russia denies planning an invasion. However, other major powers, such as the US, claim that Russia is playing military mind games and is fabricating reasons to invade. With invasion seeming imminent, I spoke to Dr. Robert Patman from the University of Otago, and I began by asking what the current situation is in the Russian-Ukraine conflict.
Well, the current situation is in the last few months, Russia has been mobilizing a lot of troops. Some estimates say 130,000 plus troops around the border of Ukraine. And in addition, those troops have been accompanied by heavy artillery and other logistics. And there are also signs that of intent here, because the Russians are constructing field hospitals and also engineering units. These are enablers of war. And so they're worrying signs. Now, you might say, well, how do we know this? Well, we know this through US and NATO spy satellites, but we also know this through independent commercial satellites like Maxar, which record this information. So we have a fair degree of evidence and certainty about what's happening around Ukraine, and Russia has essentially engaged in the biggest military build-up since the end of the Cold War in Europe. So many people now are fearful that this will result in a war.
Is there any clear rationale as to why this may occur? Like, is it a power play? Are there specific resources in the Ukraine?
Well, it is a power play, and Mr. Putin presides over an authoritarian regime, and he's concerned that Ukraine, which is not occupied by pro-Russian separatists in the east of the country, the rest of the Ukraine is democratic, has a democratic political system, and is increasingly looking to develop relations with the West. Ukraine and Russia have a tradition, a deep history of cultural and people-to-people ties. About 30% of Ukrainians are Russian speakers, so their links go back a long way in history. Mr. Putin's concerns are that he wants the rest of the world to guarantee that Ukraine will never be allowed to join NATO. Mr. Putin is very concerned about the expansion of NATO in the post-Cold War era, and so he's made this demand. Of course, that demand is unacceptable to most democratic countries, because countries like New Zealand, which made the choice to go non-nuclear in its security policy, we as a country that made that choice and has an independent foreign policy, we of course recognize the right of others to do that, and are concerned when a big neighbor says, an authoritarian neighbor says to a smaller democratic neighbor, we want a veto over your security choices.
What would be the issue if Ukraine did join NATO?
Well, I don't think that's going to happen, because there's no indication that the NATO is prepared to accept Ukraine membership in the near future. But the more military pressure Mr. Putin puts on Ukraine, ironically, the more NATO will figure large in Ukrainian consciousness, because the more insecure they feel because of living next door to Russia, the more they will want security guarantees provided by membership of NATO. That's why, by the way, 14 countries in Eastern Europe wanted to join NATO after the Cold War, because they had historical memories of what was interference by Russia's predecessor, the Soviet Union. They remembered the historical interference by the Soviet Union in places like Hungary in 1956, what was then called Czechoslovakia in 1968, and also the fact that Russia inspired or prodded Poland into having martial law in the early 80s. Now, Eastern European countries are very, they have memories of a Soviet sphere of influence in Eastern Europe, and the reason they're all backing Ukraine is because they believe that it is not just about Ukraine, it's about an attempt by Mr. Putin to establish a sphere of influence, not only in Ukraine, but throughout the rest of Eastern Europe.
So obviously a lot of Eastern European countries have had quite a lot of Russian influence. Is there any indication of what it might be like in the Ukraine if Russia is able to invade?
I think there's a great deal of hostility towards Russia and Eastern Europe, and I think Mr. Putin has underestimated that. The only countries actually supporting his line on the Ukraine are fellow authoritarian regimes which owe their existence to Mr. Putin's support. He provides a sort of life support system for Belarus, Mr. Lukashenko, and also the regime in Kazakhstan. Now, both Kazakhstan and Belarus, which are neighbours of Russia, have seen popular protests which were put down with the assistance of Russia. So there's two authoritarian allies of Mr. Putin's regime. But other than that, there's very little support for Mr. Putin's position. Hungary is probably the exception, which has a populist leader who has received Russian assistance. So Hungary is probably Russia's best friend. Hungary is a member of NATO, but is sympathetic to what Mr. Putin wants to do, apparently. But apart from that, Poland, Romania, Bulgaria, these countries are firmly behind the government of Mr. Zelensky, who was elected 2 years ago in Ukraine. So, yeah, I mean, clearly, why is this happening at this time? Which goes back to your original question. I think Mr. Putin may have calculated that this was a good time to reinvigorate a long-term goal that he has of extending Russian influence in Eastern Europe. He may have made that decision on the basis of what he saw as a declining USA. He may have reached that sort of assessment because of the fact that the United States was defeated in Afghanistan and left during the Biden administration. He's also aware that his former ally, Mr. Trump, in the United States, President Trump, presided over a great deal of polarization in the United States, and America remains a deeply divided society. So putting those two factors together, foreign policy decline, the perception of American foreign policy decline, the perception that America was divided, he may have thought this was a good time to press his long-standing case that Russia's security interests must be given much greater respect in Eastern Europe.
Do you think as well that bigger power plays, the US, because they're quite distracted with COVID and things at the moment, do you think that has come into account?
Well, yeah, but we also shouldn't forget domestic politics within Russia. Russia has been ravaged by COVID as well. And in addition, the economy is smaller than that of Italy's. For a country which is nearly a sixth of the world's land space, that's pretty disappointing. And there are signs of unrest. Mr. Putin's been in power 22 years, either as prime minister, either as president or prime minister, and he's had plenty of time to get the economy in shape, and it's got sluggish growth. So he has, if you like, domestic reasons for wanting a nationalist gain, that is, to be doing something which confirms to his vision of Russia as acting as a great power. And he hopes, I think, to distract many people from within Russia from some of their everyday problems to take pride in what is seen as a foreign policy gain. So, yeah, we shouldn't rule out domestic politics affecting the authoritarian regime of Mr. Putin.
That was Dr. Robert Patman from the University of Otago discussing the current Russian-Ukraine crisis and the potential outcomes. I also spoke to Dr. Nick Smith from the University of Canterbury about the situation and about the history of Russia and Ukraine. I began by asking how the current situation is different from 2014.
Well, I think one of the big differences is the scale of the kind of escalation by Russia. So in 2014, it was kind of a covert operation in how they annexed Crimea, but there was never really any threat of Russia coming in and invading the whole of Ukraine. Now, with this military build-up, up to, I'm not even sure the latest number, but definitely over 100,000 troops amassed on the Ukrainian border, there are a lot of fears around, well, what could Russia do with this kind of force? And there's fears around them moving into places like Kiev, obviously solidifying the Donbass region, but also really taking big chunks of Ukraine. So that's one of the big differences. And also, I think now there's a much bigger security issue. More broadly speaking, I think the relationship between Russia and the West is far worse than it was in 2014. And now the 2014 crisis was actually started by Russia's fear around the EU's enlargement and the threat of an association agreement between the EU and Ukraine. That's more of an economic trade agreement, right? Now the question's more around NATO, and the kind of permutations of NATO for Russia are much more serious. The threat perceptions in Russia towards NATO also are more serious. So I think that's kind of added a much more, I would say it's spiraling the situation a bit more aggressively than it was in 2014.
Do you think the play-in from the US is aiding the sort of speed that Russia's going at?
It's certainly, the US's presence in all of this is a major factor. From the perception of Russia, the US's role, because the US has a significant power advantage over Russia, it's a behemoth, right? It's still the world's top dog. The fact they have play such a prominent role in European security, in a way, I think it's kind of, in the minds of the Russians, forcing them to take more aggressive steps to try and kind of get their way here. Because what Russia really wants is a new security architecture for Europe. And ideally what Russia wants is a European security architecture that doesn't involve the United States. So the Russians say, well, we're all for balancing power on the continent. So what they want is a security architecture that takes into account their interests as well. So right now they perceive that the European security architecture, the kind of the way that European security is managed, favors too much the West and particularly the United States. So from their perspective, they want Russia to be treated as an equal in Europe. So they feel, as it currently stands, they are subordinated below kind of an American-centric security order. So that's a big ask, right? Because so many countries in Europe rely on the United States for security, right? NATO expansion was about bringing these countries that felt vulnerable under the protection of the US. So the US has a lot of legal commitments in Europe. So what Russia's asking is quite a big step.
And just on a more local level, the Russian military sort of versus the Ukraine forces, how's that looking?
There's no question that Russia is a stronger power. Its military is more advanced. They have more resources, more capabilities. But I don't think anyone for a second would believe that Russia can easily conquer Ukraine. If they enter Ukraine, I think there is going to be a war of attrition. The Ukrainians are going to stand their ground. The Ukraine army is not a joke either. They have been modernizing, improving their capabilities. They have some Western support there as well. Not the level of support that they would like, because obviously they would like to be in NATO and they would like to be protected by Article 5 of NATO, which means that if any one NATO country is attacked, then all NATO countries come to their aid. So they don't have that right now, but they do have quite a lot of support, particularly military aid. So that's one of the things I think puts my mind at ease somewhat as to what Russia will do, because I think if they try and take places like Kiev or try to move in to the mainland of Ukraine past the current kind of Donbass region where there's a lot of kind of, that's where the main kind of front line is at the moment, I think that will lead to a very painful and protracted conflict that wouldn't be easy for Russia as well.
And in the past, Russia's had sort of a lot of involvement in sort of European areas. Have there been any similarities this time with past events?
Yeah, I think what we're seeing is this is kind of the Russian MO at the moment, particularly when it concerns countries that fall within what they define as their near abroad. So the near abroad is these territories that were once in the Soviet Union but are now independent countries, save for the Baltics, because the Baltic countries, Estonia, Lithuania, Latvia, they were part of the EU's expansion, NATO's expansion. So they kind of fall without this near abroad. And, yeah, well, the Russians see the near abroad as kind of their sphere of privilege interests. So for them, they're the only country that can have legitimate foreign policy aims there. So what they've done in the past in places like Georgia in 2008 and more recently in Ukraine is they kind of get these breakaway regions, right? And they support them, they back them up. This is the obviously Luhansk and Donetsk and Ukraine, but in Georgia it was South Ossetia and Abkhazia. And when things happen in places like Ukraine or Georgia, they're able to kind of influence those countries by escalating through these kind of de facto breakaway regions. So I think we're seeing that right now. Clearly, Russia has a clear demand of what they want to happen here. So this kind of escalation, the threats that they're projecting towards Ukraine, well, they clearly want some concessions from Ukraine and from the West about NATO enlargement. They want unequivocally NATO to rule out any opportunity that Ukraine could join. And they're kind of settling for a kind of Ukraine to become a buffer state or a neutral state, or the popular term is Finlandization. So to become like Finland during the Cold War. So that's a state that can be democratic, can be capitalist, but can't have a foreign policy. Essentially, they would have to render themselves neutral. In practice, I mean, that would give Russia probably more say in Ukraine than the West, because again, they still would have control of these breakaway regions as well.
Do you think that Russia is trying to almost put power over the West, or do you think they are just trying to equalize the power?
I think they're trying to demonstrate that when it comes to the near abroad and when it comes to Ukraine, they have more power than the West. And I think it comes down to a simple equation. Russia is willing to pay a higher price for Ukraine than anyone else. And they're willing to demonstrate that. They demonstrated that with the annexation of Crimea in 2014. They're demonstrating it now. They're basically proving that to the West, Ukraine just doesn't matter enough. And I think they've been proven right. I think the Ukrainians deep down realize that as well. Because this kind of pipe dream of NATO, they still cling to it. But I think they realize that ultimately, the West has not proven to be credible as a partner in the face of Russian aggression. So that's kind of what I see is happening right now. This is a demonstration by Russia that when push comes to shove, they're the ones that are willing to kind of escalate and pay costs, right, to kind of fulfill their national interests.
That was Dr. Nick Smith from the University of Canterbury about the Russia... Sorry, discussing Russia's military and why Russia may be looking to invade.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.